Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Bernadette Peters is known for versatility and a talent that lights up the stage and screen. She originated the Broadway role of Dot in the production of Sunday in the Park with George. We'll revisit our interview with Bernadette Peters from 2012 later on this hour. And a quick note, we hope to get Jason Sudeikis on the show with his mother, Kathy, soon. They were originally scheduled to appear today. But first up, a new production of Sunday in the Park with George. It's a musical inspired by a painting, Seurat's A Sunday Afternoon on the Island of La Grande Jatte. Seurat changed the course of painting with this one piece, and we're about to find out a whole lot more about it. With us, again, is George Harder. He's Executive Director of Musical Theater Heritage that's presenting this new production. And, George, always good to have you here.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Also, here's Nicole Myers, who's an Associate Curator of European Art at the Nelson Atkins. And, Nicole, nice to have you, too.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, George, this painting is so moving that it caused Stephen Sondheim to write an entire musical. How did that happen?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I'll try to give you a thumbnail sketch. The story begins in 1981. Mm-hmm. Stephen Sondheim works for a couple of years to get a show up on Broadway called Merrily We Roll Along. Mm-hmm. It lasts 6 days.
Whoa.
Critics panned it. The customers didn't seem to like it either. And Stephen Sondheim, the great Stephen Sondheim, believe it or not, got so disgusted with the commercial theater industry that he was going to give up writing musicals altogether.
Wow.
Had he done that, we wouldn't have Into the Woods.
Yeah.
But he was going to give up writing musicals altogether and write mystery novels. But he was having a conversation with a writer friend of his, James Lapine, and Sondheim was lamenting about people just don't realize how hard it is to create a lasting work of art, how many details you have to sift through and discern. Lapine said, well, maybe we should write a show about it. And Lapine said, do you know that painting by Georges Seurat, Sunday Afternoon something something, where he made this painting with all these little dots and it took him 2 years? It's making theaters kind of like that, then, is it? You know, it really is.
Huh.
And so they got out a humanities book, looked at the painting in a book, and Sondheim, you know, it looks like a theater set. And Lapine said, well, but there's one character missing, and that's the painter. And Sondheim said, no, the painter's in all those little dots, just like the author of a musical is in all the musical notes.
Mm-hmm.
They knew they had a show. That's how it came about.
It's a pretty good story, George. Well, Nicole Myers, tell us about this work, which has moved so many people. I mean, first, did Seurat actually come across this scene and decide to paint it? Or what do we know about how this thing came about to begin with?
Sure. And it was, as you just noted, it was several years in the making.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a scene that he would have seen in late 19th century Paris, where you have the rise of a wealthy middle class that suddenly has free time. And what they do with it is to go to the parks on Sunday, their day off. So you have a mixing of social classes that would go and lay out by the water and really try to enjoy the sunshine in Paris. So this is something that he certainly would have come across in his everyday life. And was a subject, leisure, was a subject that was championed by the Impressionists, the generation of artists that came before Seurat.
Hmm. Well, what's interesting to me about this painting, obviously, is he introduces this new style, pointillism. Where did he get the idea to do that?
There were a lot of theories at the time, color theories, and trying to understand optics in the 19th century. So it really had a scientific basis in thinking about how we can best represent how we optically see light and color. And there was a theory that was developed about dividing up color, sort of the divisionist brushstroke. So to take pure colors, to apply them separately on a canvas, side by side or slightly overlapping, and that would accentuate the colors and create a vibrancy that would replicate luminosity and the effect of light in the painting.
And it does, right?
It does. It definitely does. And the creation of small dots, that is Seurat 100%. There will be many other artists that take inspiration from this particular divisionist style, but the creation of small, really precisely applied individual dabs of these vibrant complementary colors was 100% Seurat.
So he ushers in this new style then, right?
He does. And there are other artists that are experimenting with it in 1886, which is when he reveals the Grande Jatte at the last Impressionist exhibition. But his style was really seen as being the forerunner, and he became immediately championed as the leader of this new avant-garde.
I was going to say, because at the time that Seurat took on this painting, he was, I guess, in some sense, really going against the tides of the times, right? Because he was going against what the Impressionists were all about with his seemingly frozen figures that are in this work. The Impressionists were all about, you know, movement and excitement and light, right?
Exactly. It's almost anti-Impressionism. And it would be coined New Impressionism, Neo-Impressionism. And it was kind of him biting his thumb a little bit at an older generation of artists. He was about 20 years younger than Monet and Renoir at the time of this last Impressionist exhibition, and it was a response to Impressionism. It embraced it in the sense that he chooses the same subjects, celebrating modern life, going outdoors to find his subject matter. But what he didn't like about Impressionism and what had been criticized was the spontaneity and the fact that there wasn't anything solid. There's no place to land in an Impressionist painting. The brushwork goes in all different directions, and there wasn't a great emphasis on composition or even the subject matter. So for him, it was taking what they started, but through science, through this desire to really translate the effects of light, something the Impressionists really ushered in, but giving it solidity and this really precise manner of doing this was his sort of revolution.
Well, how did the Impressionists sort of respond to what Seurat had done here?
I think you could say a bomb went off he displayed this painting at the Impressionist exhibition. People had a sense, of course, of what he was working on, but it wasn't something that the Impressionists themselves obviously were doing. And I think when you have this older generation, again, the Monet, the Renoir, they didn't react too positively to it. But that said, one of the founding members of Impressionism, Camille Pissarro, he wholly embraced it because 1886 was actually a crisis moment in terms of art in Paris and the avant-garde. Impressionism had been around for over a decade at that point, and there was this criticism that there was nothing solid, that these paintings, there was nothing worthy of them in terms of being remembered in art history or perhaps having the solidity to go into a museum. So some of the artists, they dealt with this reaction, this kind of bomb that went off in different ways. But Pissarro is one of the artists that was very open to it. He was the oldest member of the Impressionists and experimented with it. His son did. And from there, it kind of radiates out into a whole new generation of artists.
Is it true that when this was first displayed, that two other well-known artists withdrew their works?
I've heard that as well. I would have to go back and really look into
see. Because they talk about that in the show.
Right. I think when all of these exhibitions would come together and you had these groups of artists that were often associated as a group but were sort of vying for their own personal styles, there was turmoil at just about every Impressionist or independent artist exhibition with artists pulling out last minute. But it was very scandalous. I do think that this older generation of Impressionists, with the exception of Pissarro, were really insulted. They were still there, and they were still really moving forward with their style that they had started. So they saw this as a radical break and even a little bit as an insult.
I'm just struck by the fact that it took 2 years for him to pull this painting off. I think I read somewhere that he actually had to complete 50 studies in the course of producing this thing. So I guess the obvious question is, how difficult is pointillism compared to Impressionism to complete a painting?
Well, one of the hallmarks of Impressionism is its speed, is to go out before the motif and paint it very rapidly to catch the impression as it's there.
Yeah.
With Seurat, to take 2 years to paint a monumental painting, I mean, we're talking about the Grand Jatte, that's about 7 by 10 feet. I mean, it's a huge painting, again, sort of challenging the intimate scale of Impressionist painting. So the 2 years was not just the application of these tiny dots, which, to be sure, takes a very long time, a great deal of patience. There's so much layering and thought that went into each color harmony that he creates in this grouping of about 44 figures. But Seurat had a traditional training. He actually went to the government-sponsored École des Beaux-Arts, the School of Fine Arts, and his preparation in terms of making drawings in black and white, many studies of the figures, painted studies. This was all part of a very traditional artistic training in the 19th century. So that actually is not unique at all to this artist. It reveals his desire to bring classical components back to modern art while at least still focusing on modern subjects in a style that could only scream modernity in the 19th century.
Seurat didn't live that long. Is this his masterpiece?
I would say that it is, yes. Because he dies very young at the age of 31, he really only creates about 6 paintings that he himself said were his most important works. And these were these monumental large-scale paintings. He would create another 3 after this that focused on either models posing or themes of urban popular entertainment like dance halls mm-hmm. or the circus. But in terms of the impact, as I mentioned, in 1886 when he displays this painting, the art world kind of came to a halt. And you have a number of artists in all different movements who literally become stuck. And either they pick it up and experiment with it. Van Gogh is a great example mm-hmm. of that. He'll pick it up, play with it, and then take these lessons of color theory and apply it in a very different way. Or you get artists like Monet that realized that his style perhaps needed to change or that they were kind of stuck in a moment. And you get everyone fleeing from Paris. Where you get artists, you know, that are going to the south of France or are going to Brittany or the coast. Monet himself traveling around a bit as well. So it is this kind of, in terms of a masterpiece, it is, of course, but it's also the import of the time and what happens after it's shown.
If you want to see this piece today, you have to go to Chicago.
Chicago,
right?
To the Art Institute of Chicago, and it's worth the trip. It definitely is.
Well, George, how does the production incorporate Seurat's painting here? How are the two tied together? Walk through that a little bit more for us.
Well, first of all, I want to say that while we're talking about historical accuracy here in the life of Seurat and painting the painting.
Yeah.
Sunday in the Park with George the Musical is not a biographical depiction of the life of Seurat. In fact, the fact that he dies at 31 and nobody knows very much about him is what opened the door for Sondheim and Lapine
to paint their own landscape,
to fictionalize his life.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I tried to find out why he died at 31. What happened to him?
You know, of course, without any kind of scientific information, there's a lot of theories on what he died of. It was very sudden. It was a sudden illness with fever that came on. He dies 2 days later. They think it might have been diphtheria or perhaps pneumonia, but there's no way to really be conclusive.
The impressionists got him. The masters came and got him. They were offended by what he was doing.
Conspiracy theory.
Let's spread that story around a little bit, yeah. And Sunday, your production doesn't get into that theory, does it, George?
No, it really doesn't. They mention that in the second act. But how the painting is incorporated into the musical is it becomes a metaphor for Sondheim's process of creating theater. There's a lot of talk about details and color, balance, order, and several scenes show the character of Georges dabbing his paintbrush at the air, creating all of these dots, and meanwhile, musical notes accompany that, which give us the transfer of the visual art to the audio art of a musical.
Yeah.
So it becomes a metaphor for the process of how difficult it is to create a lasting work of art and mm-hmm. how much time it takes.
I should just point out that the Musical Theater Heritage production of Sunday in the Park with George runs March 28th through the 14th of April at Crown Center. Tickets, musicaltheaterheritage.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, why did you want to take on this production, George? Because everyone regards it as such a challenging work.
Well, it won a Pulitzer Prize for drama in 1985, and yet it has never been professionally produced in this area.
Really?
And
because
of the difficulty.
It's so tough, yeah.
And Leawood Stage Production did it about 4 or 5 years ago, a community theater out in Leawood, very, very good company. Sarah Crawford, our artistic director and who directs all of our shows, she's very passionate about the music for this show and loves Sondheim. Any theater person is going to be passionate about the music in Sunday in the Park with George. So she had lobbied for a couple of years to do this show. And in the past, we've always done a safe show like The Music Man, but then we do a risky show like Sweeney Todd.
Mm-hmm.
We did, Gypsy 1 year, but we did a risky show, which was 1776 with 40 men played by 40 women. That was our risky show.
That's a good word for it, George.
And our risks have always paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Crawford, to be honest with you, we weren't real crazy about taking this on. But Sarah has done such a wonderful job for us, and she was so passionate about this that we said, yes, we'll produce it.
Let's listen to a piece of music from this production. And this first track is Finishing the Hat. Do you want to say anything about that?
Well, this is when we made a little joke about Seurat. Obviously, had OCD in his obsession for this painting, and that sort of comes out a little bit in this piece of music, because he is obsessed with finishing the dots that it takes to make up one hat on one character in this giant painting.
Okay.
White, a blank page or canvas? The challenge, bring order to the whole. Through design, composition, tension, balance, light, and harmony.
You know, George, your artistic director, Sarah Crawford, told the Star that when you listen to the music in this production, you can hear the painter painting.
It's true, yeah. I think that the music depicts the beauty of art, the beauty of this painting, while the story and the dialogue depicts the angst, the anguish,
yeah.
And the tolls that it takes on relationships.
We're talking about the musical theater heritage production of Sunday in the Park with George, running through April 14th at Crown Center. Again, tickets, musicaltheaterheritage.com. Let's go to some phone calls here. Mark from Leawood. Mark, you're on Up to Date. Good morning. You there, Mark? He was going to ask a question about, it's not about Sunday in the Park at all. The shadows on the painting seem inconsistent. He wants to know why that is. Can you give us a sense of that, Nicole?
Basically because he was making studies for several months, and he was going at different times of day and in different climatic conditions. And what he would do is he would make these studies before the motif with different figures and different configurations. But then at the end of the day, this was a painting produced in the studio. It was not produced before nature. So it has a very artificial flavor to it, and
yeah,
that was very much intentional.
See, talking about how the shadows are going different ways. I mean, the light can only be coming from one direction, but the shadows are in different directions.
I think it's that there's probably multiple points of light when you look at the painting. There is a general sense that, to me at least, that it's coming from the left and in terms of the projection of the shadows. But there is an inconsistency, and I don't think that was something that he was terribly concerned with. He could have painted it with his training. He could have painted it absolutely realistically. He could have put in as much or as little detail as he wanted. So these were choices that he made, and it shows that he's going for the overall effect of the feeling of what it would have been like to be here in the sun, a day of leisure, and the kinds of people and the feeling that you would have got from being there.
Have you been to Chicago to see this work?
I have,
work?
Yeah. I'll admit it's one of my favorites.
When you come around a corner and you see this thing, what did you think?
It really has a powerful impact, even when you know the picture, if you've seen reproductions of it before.
Well, everybody's seen it. I mean,
if you've seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, there's a really wonderful scene there, which I always love to point out when talking about this painting, because it has made its way in pop culture in many different ways. But even with that knowledge, the actual impact of the size, the scale of the painting, when you think about Impressionist works, they were made for middle-class collectors. They were made to fit in a home. They're small and they're intimate.
Mm-hmm.
This painting was not. He had greater ambition than that, and it was a choice he made to really want to compete with the great masters of the Western art tradition.
Are there painters today who practice pointillism?
I think Lichtenstein comes to mind when I think about the sort of reaching branches. But what most people probably don't realize in terms of the impact of pointillism, and Seurat in particular, was that you have Matisse who experiments with it. You have Picasso. If you look at Picasso paintings in his still lives, when he wants to make a little pun in his paintings and show something in a work like a glass being transparent, mm-hmm. he uses pointillism, this idea of having a scientific system, a code, a language to describe light and the sensation of vision. So it's not that Seurat was in the 19th century and then you might have an artist like Lichtenstein who is experimenting with dots, this idea of optical mixing that we see color side by side in our eyes, mix them. There was always a trajectory, and you can find it really from essentially his day up until today.
Wow.
Yeah, early color printing uses the same theory, doesn't it, in television?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
George, tell us a little more about this theme of struggle that's in this production of Sunday in the Park with George. Explain that to us a little more.
Well, I think that Stephen Sondheim, in wanting to create a musical that would almost be a diatribe of his process and to send a message to his detractors, and he had a lot of them in 1984, it's only now that people are starting to, in the larger sense, appreciate what Sondheim's contributions to the theater. But in 1984, that wasn't true. And he created this largely to send a message to his critics and detractors of how difficult it is to come up with this stuff. That's the reason why struggle and the obsession with details is the theme all through this theater piece.
You know, tell us about your stars, George. I know Tim Scott is back with you. Tell us about your leads.
Well, Tim Scott first came to us in 2005, I think. He was our Billy Bigelow when we did Carousel in a Loading Dock Downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Just came here from California, has since appeared on every stage in Kansas City, and is much sought after as a leading man. He's a good actor, a good singer, and I don't know if he can dance or not, so I don't know that if he's a triple threat. I've never danced with Tim Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Katie Carell is quite the find. She's getting a lot of work around. She has such a distinctive voice and a distinctive vibrato that it's difficult for her to start out in musical theater in an ensemble situation and earn her way up, because she's such a talented actress and has such a unique voice that when you hear her, you have to feature her.
Mm-hmm.
And when Sarah heard her, they put her right away in Evita.
Well, again, Sunday in the Park with George runs through April 14th at Crown Center. Tickets, musicaltheaterheritage.com. George Harder, always good to have you here. Thanks for coming in. And Nicole Myers, thank you for explaining this great work of art and pointillism to us.
It's
did a great
pleasure.
Job.
It's my pleasure. Come down to the museum. We have a wonderful Seurat ourselves. It's on view in our post-impressionist gallery, so we're
that's
free
great.
To the public. Come see us.
Again, that's Nicole Myers. She's an associate curator of European art at the Nelson Atkins. Well, coming up, our 2012 interview with Bernadette Peters. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.
He's putting it together. Note by note, working on projection. Lips, teeth, throat, looking for a moment to inhale. Keeping the emotional connection, even when your fellow actors fail.
Pointing up the subtext by inflection.
Helping your director reach perfection.
Even though you have a strong objection to the way she's handling the direction. Art isn't easy. Everybody.